So, Jose, how does it feel to no longer be the only one to have bagged all four major competitions?
What do you mean?
Well, the Premier League, UEFA Champions League, Emirates FA Cup and UEFA Europa League.
No, I'm still the only one.
Not anymore.
What is this you are talking about?
BT Sport has all four competitions this season and it's easy to watch on BT TV, Sky TV and online.
Unbelievable.
Four competitions, one venue. BT Sport. BT Sport will show 42 Premier League matches, all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games, plus up to 24 Emirates FA Cup matches.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, brought to you by Audible.com, as always, where you can receive a free audiobook download from audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds and test out their service. This is Jesra, your host. And we are, well, I am thrilled for the show that you have for you today because, well, one, this is a big matchup right now as the Arizona Cardinals take the trip up to Seattle to take on the defending champ Seattle Seahawks in a game that has huge implications for both teams. And for that, this is a personal treat, and I hope it's a treat for the rest of you listeners, because I have Danny Kelly joining us here in just a moment. Danny Kelly from Field Goals, our SB Nation Seattle Seahawks blog. It's one of the best blogs in the business, I must say. Danny is a fantastic writer, fantastic analyst, does a lot of work for Field Goals, and also contributes to SB Nation NFL. And I won't hold it against him completely that he's a Seahawks fan, but I'll bring him on right now. Danny, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
thanks for having me. Thank you for that intro too.
well, I mean, you're one of the guys in the network I look up to. You've done great work, and I can look at what you guys do over there at Field Goals is something is. That we hope to reach with Revenge of the Birds. Definitely you guys have the stronger, passionate group going on for good reason. So tell us what it was like to cover a championship team, because that's something we've never, you know, with the Cardinals, we've never had happen here. So tell us, how does that feel?
It was really great. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, it's crazy, just the whole ride was really crazy and fun and stressful at times. You know, the NFC Championship game was probably took years off my life, but you know, it was just really cool seeing the team. You know, they got hot at the right time, and they were playing with a lot of confidence. And you know, at the NFC Championship ended with like a really crazy cool play, and then Seahawks just went in and, you know, kind of rolled on the Broncos. So it was a dream come true. You know, I've been a fan of the team for a long time, but covering them for the last couple of years, and you know, I guess I picked up at the right time because it was just really cool to be able to cover a team that with that much success. You know, it was just I just can't even say how much fun it was.
And this is it took a little bit because now you followed the team obviously back in when the Seahawks made the Super Bowl a few years ago. Against the Steelers. How different is the fan base now compared to the Matt Hasselbeck, Sean Alexander days compared to now the Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch days?
you know, I don't really know how different the whole fan base is. I think in general, like Field Goals and specifically as sort of one of our main goals is to sort of educate the fans on what the Seahawks are doing schematically and like what to look for when they're doing different things. And so I think in some ways I hope that the fan base is a little smarter in terms of just what they just knowing what they're looking at and knowing sort of what's going on, what drives the team to do certain things, what makes them make certain moves, things like that. I think that's kind of been our goal at Field Goals, just to sort of help people understand the mindset of the team. And I think that kind of, you know, with Pete Carroll, he has such a specific and laid out plan that it was really cool sort of starting with him at the very beginning and watching him just transform the team. I think over the last 4 years, the Seahawks fans have sort of gone through this process, you know, where they were a bad team. They were 4-12, 7-9, 7-9. And now they're definitely one of the better teams in the NFL. Last year, they were the best team in the NFL in terms of definitely at the end of the year. So I think just in general, I think fans are a little bit more educated on the team. You know, a lot of people talk about bandwagon fans, but I don't really look at it that way. I think, you know, just it goes with any sort of sport, you know, wakes up some of the people who are less, they're not paying quite as much attention. They're still fans, but, you know, it goes with any team, you know, that has a lot of success. I think you sort of wake up some of those dormant fans.
Well, and I, personally, I've, as much as people get annoyed by the bandwagon fans, they are an essential part to the success of a franchise, because those bandwagon fans are the ones that suddenly go out, because the diehards are already out there spending their money on the team.
Yeah.
And it's the bandwagon fans that jump on, and, you know, not everyone jumps back off in the leaner times, but you need those bandwagon fans to build a fan base. And so it comes with the territory. It annoys the diehards because, yeah, I've been a Cardinals fan for, you know, since last year. I kind of followed them. No, but that's great. That's great. So, yeah. Take us through the offseason. Obviously, when you have a championship team, there always tends to be, with any team, a little bit of change in the dynamic, especially when it comes to the roster. We've seen in a lot of championships teams where players who were maybe not the top flight players but have gotten themselves a chance, now they jump and run for the money or simply because they came from a championship team. So their services will be wanted because they are winners now, whether that's coaches, whether that's players. What did the offseason look like for Seattle?
Yeah, you know, first of all, we thought as the season was kind of wrapping up and the playoffs were starting, a lot of us thought that we were going to lose both of our coordinators. Darrell Bevell is the offensive coordinator and Dan Quinn is the defensive coordinator. And as luck would have it, kind of the way the playoffs happened, both of those guys ended up not getting jobs because teams wanted to get guys in place, and the Seahawks kept winning. And so as time went on, you know, these teams wanted to have their people ready to go for the draft and everything. So Seahawks retained their coordinators, which I think was huge. But they did end up losing a lot of their depth players that were free agents. You know, Brandon Browner left. He signed with the Patriots. Clint McDonald, he was a key defensive lineman guy that, you know, maybe a lot of people don't know about him, but he went and signed with Tampa Bay, and I guess he's had a really good year down there. Walter Thurmond, he was one of our key nickelbacks. He went and signed with the Giants. Let's see here. There were a few others, you know, just these really strong role players that the Seahawks just couldn't really afford to keep because they have, you know, greater priorities down the line. You have to manage your cap. You can't keep everybody. You can't keep the band together. And so over the offseason, the covers are definitely raided in terms of that. Like a lot of Seattle's key just depth and not necessarily starters, but key backups that played a lot of snaps ended up leaving. And additionally, the Seahawks ended up cutting a couple of guys. Chris Clemens, defensive end, and Red Bryan, another defensive end. Those are two kind of more key veteran guys that the Seahawks really leaned on a lot for leadership last year, and they just couldn't afford to keep those guys this year, and so those guys were released. So, you know, just in general, the team, they did lose quite a bit of guys, and they managed to retain a few very key players, and Michael Bennett came back, and Tony McDaniel came back, but overall, it was definitely one of those situations that you see Super Bowl teams have where guys come in and their value goes up quite a bit just because they were Super Bowl winners.
Exactly. And O'Brien Schofield tried to leave only to find himself back on the team after.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that was a little bit of a strange situation. He signed on with New York for, I want to say, 2 years and somewhere around like, what was it? Six or eight million. Really pretty good deal for a guy that was a rotational player last year. And then once he got up there, I guess they took him into their team doctor, who I've heard just after the fact that he's very, very strict on kind of what things he looks for. And O'Brien, he's had some of the issues with his knees where I think he had a couple of torn ACLs in the past.
Well, yeah, he came out of the draft. Yes, because when he was drafted, yeah. He couldn't play most that first year because he was coming off of ACL surgery. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
So they failed the physical after the fact, and some could say, you know, it was maybe like a buyer's remorse type thing. They decided that maybe they gave him too much money or something. But regardless, that deal was voided. He went back onto the free agent market and eventually came back to the Seahawks on a much smaller deal. But definitely, I think that's, you know, really good motivation for him to play the year. And so far, he's played well. You know, he hasn't put up big numbers, but he's been in a rotational role for the Seahawks and stayed healthy, which is awesome. Just, you know, because he's had so many knee issues so far, knock on wood. But yeah, so, you know, that was one guy they lost, but they got back.
So one of the big losses you didn't mention by name was Golden Tate. How real was the drama?
How did I forget that one? Yeah.
How real was that drama that naturally we get kind of the national spin of things. Was there real drama between him and the team, specifically Russell Wilson and things off the field? Is that what ended up being what led to his departure? Even though I know he thought he was going to be able to get more money than he ended up getting because of what ended up being a fantastic receiver class. But what happened with Tate? And we're personally glad he was gone because he was one of the toughest guys to cover on the team.
I know. Yeah, he was always really good against the NFC West in general. Just he always kind of had big games against the NFC West. So I was really bummed to see him go. You know, in terms of the rumors and sort of what happened behind the scenes, I can't tell you. I don't really know. I've heard pretty much every iteration of the story, every different scenario. I've heard people who have heard this, that, the other, and so I couldn't really tell you. Bottom line, what I think happened in general is just the Seahawks were going with Percy Harvin. He had a huge deal. He was making, I want to say his cap hit number was over $11 million for this season before they traded him, obviously. So essentially they decided that Percy Harvin and Golden Tate were a little bit redundant. They weren't going to put that much money at the wide receiver position, especially with a strong draft class, blah, blah, blah. You know, so they made a business decision. They offered him something that he called laughable, and he ended up going to Detroit. And then, of course, the whole Percy Harvin fiasco went down, and the Seahawks ended up trading him.
That's what I'm going to lead to the next question is about Percy Harvin, obviously. How much has that hurt the team in terms of, well, they were counting on Percy, then to trade, then to just basically give him up for nothing. How much does that smart, how much does that hurt? Does that sting as a fan base and to the team in general? How is it affecting them on the field as well?
Well, you know, in the short term, the glass half full sort of perspective of it is that it seems as though the Seahawks have gotten back to their identity, their roots in terms of their running team, their smash mouth team. Their offense is centered on the run, especially Marshawn Lynch. And when Percy wasn't in the offense, it was a little bit different. It just felt different. They were doing a lot of some of the college game type things, you know, the end rounds with sweeps, the bubble screens, and it really felt like they had to make a concerted effort to make him a part of the team to make him a part of the offense to kind of, placate him a little bit, because now we know after the fact that apparently he was, you know, complaining about his role. And, you know, Percy, just his reputation precedes him. He's always had issues with coaching staffs and going all the way back to high school,
and
you know,
punching teammates he's a guy that gets into fights. He's a fighter.
Yeah. Apparently. And, you know, there's all these reports out that he got in a fight with Golden Tate last year at the Super Bowl. There's been reports that he punched or got in a fight with Doug Baldwin. And then there were reports after that he was sort of starting to undermine Russell Wilson a little bit. And I think at that point, that's when the Seahawks decided to pull the plug and just get him out of there. And this is all to be clear, this is all based on rumors. I don't have any inside information on what happened exactly. but just based on all the reports, kind of where there's smoke, there's fire, I essentially believe he was just being so disruptive. And I mean, the proof is in the pudding. They traded him for nothing. So obviously something was going bad, you know, behind the scenes. You know, obviously it was enough for them to be like, okay, this is just not working.
And just eat the cap hit and get him for peanuts. I mean, peanuts.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, the bottom line is, to answer your first question, yes, it sets the team back, frankly. You know, they gave up two high picks for him, a first rounder and a third rounder. You know, they gave him all this money. They decided to let Golden Tate. I still believe that it was sort of a Golden Tate or Percy Harvin type of deal. So essentially the Percy Harvin precluded you from signing Golden Tate to a longer term deal. You know, that has repercussions in the short term, has repercussions in the long term. Obviously you don't ever want a first round pick to last one season with your team. You know, those guys are your long-term starters, hopefully. So it's a big deal. You know, it's essentially like having a first rounder bust out of your program. So that's a lot to give up. Obviously, it happens to a lot of teams, but you know, the NFL parity is so strong and it's such a razor's edge that you have to walk in terms of being successful, that I think it did have an impact or it will have an impact in the long term, just in terms of that draft capital. But I think in the short term too, it just threw a wrench into the chemistry on the team, and I think you could see it a little bit at the beginning of the season. They seem to have gotten back to what they are in terms of their identity from last year a little bit more this year, but yeah. Long story short, it was a debacle. The whole Percy Harvin thing was a debacle, as we all kind of feared might be. But you know, a lot of fans had huge hopes for him. It's still really a big bummer to see him go, because he's such a exciting, awesome player. You know, it's like, yes, no way around it. It was so much fun having him on the team, but yeah, it was just bad.
This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess Rue. We're talking with Danny Kelly from Field Goals as we're previewing the Arizona Cardinals matchup week 12 against the Seattle Seahawks up there in the Pacific Northwest. And Danny's given us the lowdown about what we can see from Seattle. Another thing is, you know, the Seahawks have kind of had all sorts of fun stuff. The latest with Marshawn Lynch. I get to ask you all this stuff that's also timely. Marshawn Lynch, how unhappy is he? Because you kind of get the sense on both things. Okay, he doesn't go into the team locker room at halftime that he's unhappy. But then you get the other side of coaches that I've never met a nicer guy. How much he means a ton to the team on the field. How much is fabricated? How much of his unhappiness is real? And what is it to make of Marshawn Lynch? Because he's really, even dating back to his days in Buffalo, was really kind of an enigmatic character. The media obviously likes to be down on him because he doesn't talk to us, which makes us all very mad, because we're supposed to talk to the media. It's our job here when they talk. But nonetheless, What is the perception? Obviously, right now, the perception nationally isn't great of Marshawn, that he's going to go and he's going to be, you know, they're just going to run him to the ground, and then it's going to become Russell Wilson's team next year, because they won't, they'll have to pay him and they won't be able to pay Marshawn. What's the latest with Marshawn?
Well, again, you know, listening to all the different, I get 12 different perspectives on everything in terms of just, there's different reports here and there and whatever. But, I definitely, you know, I don't think there is definitely something to the fact that he's, unhappy with his contract or how much money he's making or something that, you know, because he held out a training camp. Pete Carroll actually confirmed, you know, they're working through some stuff. That was earlier this week. So, you know, there is something to the idea that he's not happy with the administration or the front office or the coaching staff or whatever. I think it helps a lot that over the last two or three games, you know, they've really fed him. He's been the center of the offense. You know, they had a career game against the Giants. They ran really well against the Raiders. And then last week they got over 200 yards against the Chiefs. So I think that has to help. That said, there's still reports everywhere that the Seahawks plan to move on without Lynch next year. So I think that's kind of just hanging over their head. I think, you know, Lynch, if this Lynch thing, if this halftime thing, if there was anything to it, you know, obviously the team has denied that it was anything. He was getting worked on, you know, during halftime with his back. I think maybe he feared that going into the warm locker room and then coming back out into the 19-degree weather, his back would stiffen up. And I frankly can't really blame him if that's the actual case. But the silver report out of NFL.com said that it was sort of, or he was alluding to the fact that it was sort of in defiance to this report that came out before the game that he was, you know, the Seahawks still planning to move on without him, blah, blah, blah. It's just a bunch of drama. The bottom line, I think, in terms of the short term, you know, his play is not slowed down. He brings it on game day, and I know his teammates love him. So, you know, I think they're making a mountain out of a molehill on a lot of this. I think for the now, for this year, Lynch is running as good as he has his whole career. I think, you know, the Seahawks have figured out that their offense works best when he's the centerpiece. And so, you know, it's a mutually beneficial relationship, and they're just going to ride it this year. And I would honestly guess that they haven't decided yet what they're going to do with him next year. I think, you know, a lot depends on how the home stretch goes down and how the off season goes and if he's happy, and they'll take it from there. I really actually don't think they've decided anything quite yet. But for the short term, he's running really well. You know, he's been a little banged up. His back is acting up, but that's kind of been a theme the last three years. Yeah, he has that. I mean, it's literally a weekly thing. Like, you have to wait until Friday to figure out, like, what's going on with his back.
The next topic would be Russell Wilson. Unequivocally, this is Russell Wilson's team. Has he looked in his progress this year as a quarterback this year, as a third year quarterback? How is he making? Obviously, the play's looking a little bit different. He's running more than he's ever done in his career. He's been very productive at it. How is he leadership wise? Obviously, he seems to be a type of character everyone loves. I'm a big Russell Wilson fan myself, which makes me sad inside because he's a Seahawk, which causes you know self-deprecation because I can't cheer for the Seahawks, but I want to cheer for Russell Wilson, and it's a very difficult thing to do. Tell us about his progress. How does he looking this year? Is he becoming the next star that people believe that he will become, or is he already there?
I mean, it depends on who you talk to, I think. In terms of his production and statistically speaking, his numbers have sort of plateaued. I think through the first 10 games, if you look at the first 10 games of his first three seasons, you know, it's pretty steady. In fact, you know, I think this year his numbers are a little bit better than last year through 10 games, other than his yards per attempt are down a little bit, and that can be attributed to a lot of things, but frankly, a lot of it is the Seahawks have this newfound obsession with running bubble screens. So, you know, that could have a part of it. His completion percentage, I think, is pretty level. His yardage and his touchdowns and his interceptions, those are all, you know, pretty much level. I think people who are expecting him to explode into superstardom are disappointed because it's not happening this year. You know, he's still going through some learning phases. You know, his last four games, he hasn't had a QB rating over 100, so that's the first time that's happened in his career. So I guess you could say he's in a little bit of a slump, but in terms of just the big picture, I think, you know, he's progressing, and the running thing is a big deal this year, and that can kind of be attributed to a lot of things. But I think in one way, teams are definitely afraid of what he can do with the deep ball. That's kind of been one of his bread and butter throws the first couple seasons he was in the league, and so I think teams are really being careful about defending that deep ball, and that in turn opens up a lot of room underneath, and he's able to scramble a lot. So he's actually averaging 7.7 yards per carry, which is more than his throwing, which is 7 yards. Yeah. He's like, I want to say he's like in the top 15 in rushing in the NFL, like anybody. So, you know, it's give and take. I think the way that he runs is you have to be happy about it because he just doesn't get hit very often. You know, he gets hit in the pocket more than he does running around because he's really smart. You know, he knows the lanes he needs to use. He's very disciplined about getting down before he's going to get blown up. You know, there's one or two or three times this year where he's really been hit hard, but that was like late in games when he's trying to get a first down type of things. So really, you know, other than worrying about tiring him out or something like that, and that could affect his accuracy, which is one sort of one corollary thing that you have to worry about. But other than that, like, his running has been really productive. You know, he's getting, like I said, he's getting 7-8 yards a carry. He's getting a lot of first downs via the run. So in that sense, he's definitely improved, and the offense is actually scoring more points this year. The run game is stronger. I think, you know, people have in Seattle, I think people had really, really high expectations. Obviously, after watching the Super Bowl, you expect them to just kick everyone's butt. But it just hasn't happened that way. But overall, the offense is actually playing pretty well.
Which leads us, we look at the Seahawks, obviously repeating is a very, very difficult thing to do, especially with personnel changes throughout the league in a division which is already very competitive to begin with. And so there really wasn't very much separating team to team.
No.
You look at the offense, people say, oh, Russell Wilson this, oh, Percy Harvin this, or missing Golden Tate. But if you look at the numbers, the defense is kind of what's been – is it not true that the defense is kind of what has let the team down based on that they have regressed quite a bit based on their production over a season ago, and that's where they're running into issues? Would that be an accurate portrayal of the Seahawks season so far?
Yeah, I think, you know – I don't know, there's a lot of euphemisms you could use. I think the defense isn't quite as good this year. If you look at last year's defense, the Seahawks defense, it was honestly...
I mean, it couldn't
probably
go anywhere but down, but...
statistically, it was honestly, yeah, exactly. It was probably the best defense of all time. And I'm not saying that because I'm a homer. Like, if you look at some of the stats, like, there's a good argument you could say that was the best defense of all time. So obviously when you lose some guys and, you know, it's just really, really hard to keep that rate. But that said, I think, you know, there's still a top 10 defense. If maybe top five, even they're still a good defense. I just think in general, they've struggled with a lot of injuries. You know, Bobby Wagner, who's one of their most important players, he's very, very unheralded in terms of the importance that he brings to the defense. He's missed, I think, all but two games. Cam Chancellor was out a couple of games. You know, he's all pro. So that hurts a lot. Byron Maxwell, who was really, really good last year, he missed, five or six games. You know, they lost Brandon Mebane. You know, he's a really key player on the inside. So I'm preaching to the choir, I realize that, but the Seahawks have lost to a lot of, they've lost a lot of good players, and that obviously is going to affect their performance. Not everybody can be the Cardinals, and they lose all these players and still play really well, but I think that has definitely affected their ability to, you know, play at the high, high level they did last year. So, not to like, you know, I'm not making excuses because every team has injuries, obviously. And if you look at the Cardinals, that's like the perfect example. But
what you looked at the Seahawks a season ago, one of the key strengths is the fact that on the defensive side of the ball, they just bring guys in and out the whole time. And when you have injuries and you have losses, I mean, that changes the dynamic of the team when instead of having five, six, seven guys on the defensive line where you're getting virtually no drop off, you're having a drop off now. And either guys are overplaying or the drop off of talent is much more drastic than before.
Yeah, and that's well said. I came up with this metaphor recently. I really look at each side of the ball as like a very delicate ecosystem. If you lose one guy, it can really throw things off, you know, and the whole next man up thing, they love to say that, and that's true, and it's a good rallying call and everything, but bottom line is 90% of the time, the guy in front of you is better.
Yeah, you know? And that's why they're playing.
Yeah, that's why they're starting, so, I mean, it is a good rally call, and in general, last year, the Seahawks actually did a really good job of, you know, the whole next man up thing was a big rally, big mantra for them last year, and in general, it actually did work. Byron Maxwell came in and played better than Browner did. Browner went out with an injury, and then he got suspended, so Byron Maxwell came in, he became, you know, he was arguably better than Browner, probably, you know, definitely better than Browner, so things like that do happen, but in general, I think you're not always going to see that. And Seahawks were kind of dipping into like their third and fourth string players a lot this season. So, you know, you just expect there to be some drop off. And that said, I still think they're a strong team. You know, they've played some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and they're still doing well in terms of statistics and yards and yards per play, yards per rush. The only thing that's obviously down a little bit this year is they're giving up more points.
Which is a big deal.
Which is the biggest deal.
It is the biggest
Which
deal
is obviously
of all.
The biggest stat, yeah. So, I mean, bottom line is, yes, I would say the defense is not as good as it was last year. There's still a lot of talent, and they still could, you know, get better, get hot going down the year. I think they've only had one game where the whole Legion of Boom, quote, Legion of Boom, has been out there. So that will happen this week. You know, they'll have Byron Maxwell back, and then Cam Chancellor's back, and he's looking better. And then Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. So that'll be huge. And, you know, they could, you know, never know what'll happen down the stretch.
So is Richard Sherman now been taken down a notch of his invincibility? At least on a national level, he's being thrown out a little bit more. He hasn't been as shut down. I'm not going to say that he's not one of the best corners in the league, because he does what he does, and he does it extremely well. And more than anything, he has made the biggest plays at the biggest moments, and he's earned every accolade. But is his play dropped at all this year, or what could be the explanation for how he's, obviously he's an emotional player, and so he kind of wears that on his sleeve all the time.
Yeah. You know, I think there's sort of this, his personality, he brings on the criticism whenever someone makes a play on him, essentially, you know, so anytime anyone beats him, it's like this big deal. But in general, I still think he's had a really good season. I wouldn't say that his play has dropped off significantly. I think that his numbers are certainly down. Last year, you know, he was the least targeted corner in the NFL, and he had the most interceptions of any cornerback. So, I mean, again, historic year last year.
It's hard to repeat. Yeah. Really, it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, this year he's, let's see, let me check and see. He's been having a really good season, I think, honestly. Well, let's see if I can find him here. I want to say per Pro Football Focus, when he's targeted, opposing quarterbacks have a rating of 70 something. Here it's 73, which is 13th in the NFL. So it's not like he's playing terribly. And I would say that some teams are definitely, in terms of the air of invincibility, you know, week one, the Packers did not throw in his direction. And so it sort of set this tone, set the bar. And then since then, teams have definitely been targeting him. So he's not like invincible. And, you know, as he would say, you're going to give up some plays. It happens. It's the NFL, you know. And there's a lot of, you know, the way the Seahawks play football, they're not going to allow you, but they're going to concede some of the underneath stuff in terms of they just do not want to get beat deep. So a lot of things like slants and comebacks, they're going to connect that against Richard Sherman. It's just going to happen. So, but in general, I mean, I've been really happy with how he's played. I think he's made some really big plays at big times. And here's an interesting stat per PFF, per Pro Football Focus. He's given up 0.94 yards per coverage snap, which is eighth best in the NFL, which is tied with Darrelle Revis. It's just a little bit below Antonio Cromartie. In terms of cover snaps for target, he's not that high in that. So I guess, yeah, you're right. They are targeting him quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, overall, I just think he's been solid. I wouldn't say that his play has dropped off significantly. Last year was just sort of a historic season for him.
All right. Yeah. Getting into this game, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. We're talking to Danny Kelly from fieldgoals.com, our SB Nation, Seattle Seahawks team site. And we're talking about the matchup that the Cardinals will have this weekend against the Seattle Seahawks in week 12. The Cardinals, at least it feels, well, this is obviously, what is the feeling that at 6-4, you know, four losses in 10 games, especially now three games behind the Cardinals, is there any sort of panic right now or worry in Seattle land up there for how this the season is playing out?
Well, to answer your question, yes. I mean, there's a certain amount of it. I just want to back up. I had accidentally misread the stat when you asked me about if people are targeting him. Per Pro Football Focus, Sherman is getting targeted once every 7.8 snaps, which is second best in the NFL, behind Stephon Gilmore of Buffalo. So to answer your question, he's really not getting targeted that much. But as in terms of the Seahawks in people freaking out around here, I think, you know, people realize this is kind of a make or break game. Falling to 6-5 in the NFC West, I think your playoff odds go to about 30%. Right now they're around 43%. And then if they win this week, it goes up to 60%. So bottom line is it's a huge game. It's one of those, you know, people hate to say the must-win games, but if you want to make the playoffs, this is huge.
Well, and so, I've said in the piece, our Marshall Faulk, you know, GMC piece I wrote today, mm-hmm. if the Cardinals win this game, if they've basically snuffed out any, the division, I think, is over. I mean, the division is the Cardinals. It's all it is a matter of, can they get the number one seed? I mean, they'll be 10-1. They'll be four games up on Seattle with five games left to play. They won't. Seattle won't
lose out, essentially.
Yeah. Right. And they would hold. There would be no way for Seattle to hold a tiebreaker over them head to head, and that would lock up every. If actually, aside from Green Bay, they would have a head to head tiebreaker over half the NFC. Is what it feels like right now.
Yeah, they're perfect in the NFC so far, right?
Yes, they're 7-0, playing really, really. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't look like they're playing well, but they're playing really well. And that they're kind of winning ugly. Kind of the turning point is where we kind of look back to was week 16 a season ago when they went into Seattle and won then without a great offensive performance. I mean, they ran the ball a lot, four interceptions.
Can we not talk about that game?
Well, and it's interesting, cause at least from my perspective, Seattle has lost that air of invincibility that it had. The Cardinals have been there, done that. And so is there, do Seattle fans, do the Seahawks view this as is it a worry game, or is it, hey, we got this, we can do it? What's kind of the feeling towards this game?
I would guess that it's probably somewhere in the middle, like in terms of 50-50. It depends on who you talk to. I think early in the season, people probably would have been like, oh yeah, we got this, you know. But now the Cardinals just keep winning. They just keep winning tough games. They, you know, they beat a really good team last week. I think they've sort of started making people into believers a little bit more than perhaps they were early on. You know, because like you said, they kind of were winning ugly, but they were still winning. But I think now people are like, wow, these guys are a lot better than we thought. They're really well coached. You know, they've got some really good schemes. They're very – I just say they're ballsy. I really like the style that you guys play with in terms of, you know, you're blitzing on 50% of your snaps pretty much, and you're throwing it deep, and, you know, whoever's playing quarterback, whatever, just have them throw it up and have one of your really, really good receivers go get it. So, I mean, in terms of just the way that you guys play, I think it's a little intimidating, you know? It's like you got to be on it to beat you guys. And so I think for me, I don't know what you want to call it, a worry game or whatever. I'm definitely not like thinking it's going to be an easy game by any means, just because it's at home. I think it's going to be a battle. I think it's going to be typical NFC West grudge match, you know, come down to the wire. It'll probably come down to the last drive, and it's going to be stressful and crazy.
And it's not going to be fun at all to watch.
No, it's going to be miserable.
So obviously where the way the Cardinals are built, the way the Seahawks are built, they really, it's kind of an interesting thing. The Cardinals defensively stop the run. The Seahawks are successful at running the ball. Something has to give. What will that be? The Cardinals haven't given a 100-yard rusher since Frank Gore in week 6 of last season. And even it was a 25 carry 101 yard performance. So I believe it was the only 100-yard rusher they allowed all last season. So since Todd Bowles came in, they've allowed one, and that was by 1 yard.
Yep.
And that's kind of the bread and butter. And the Cardinals have been susceptible over the course of the seasons of the past, but Seattle passing attack isn't particularly potent. In fact, the Cardinals have held four of the last 5 weeks their opponents to under 200 yards passing. Granted, the one that wasn't was over 400 yards to Nick Foles. So, but at the same time, it's convenient to do that. But nonetheless, there is passes. How will the Seahawks go about, or will it just be one of the, hey, either you're going to be better than our run game, or we're just going to keep trying to run until something happens?
Well, I mean, I think they have to, frankly. That is their identity. Even if you're a really good run defense, still going to run the ball, I think. And, I mean, if anyone's going to do it, it can be the Seahawks. I think just they're leading the NFL in rushing. They have a really strong rushing attack. Marshawn Lynch has been on it. They're finally starting to get healthy on the offensive line, although they did just lose Max Unger for a couple weeks, but that hurts. But then they're getting back James Carpenter at the left guard position, so that should kind of help things out there. I think in general, though, we have to see Russell Wilson play a little bit better. And I think last week he played better. He had a little bit more poise, and he looked a little more comfortable in the offense. And he made a couple of nice throws that didn't end up being caught. And so things like that, I think just in general, they're going to have to hit some of their explosive plays to win this game. And I always say it's a cliche, but I think they're going to have guys make plays. Like, the Seahawks on offense haven't had anybody making plays save for Marshawn Lynch lately. Just have a guy go up and make a really, really hard catch, more than once. Like, that's part of the reason the Cardinals are doing so well is you guys have playmakers. You got Michael Floyd throwing a DB on his back and making a big catch, or John Brown, beating the guy down the field, making a really hard catch and making a huge play when you really need it, at the end of the game. These are the kind of things that the Seahawks need to do. It's a cliche, I know that, but they have to make big plays. They just have to, or else they're not going to win this one, just because the Cardinals are so good. The margin for error is just so slim.
Where do you see the in terms of matches, where do the Seahawks match up favorably and then not so favorably?
That's a good question. Honestly, you guys have great corners, and the Seahawks receivers this year haven't been their strength, so that's a little bit tough. I don't know how susceptible you guys are up the middle to tight ends, but that could be one area that if Seattle gets some of their tight ends healthy this week, that it could be sort of something they could attack. And then just things like using Marshawn Lynch for screenplays, things like that. So honestly, it's a tough matchup because Cromartie and Peterson match up, and they'll be able to sort of work on Jermaine Kearse and Paul Richardson or whoever's on the outside, Doug Baldwin on the inside. And so I would say if anyone is the go-to guy this week, it would be Doug Baldwin through the slot and take your chances. Has Honey Badger, has he been playing a lot in the inside there, or what's the inside of your guys' defense looking like these days?
Well, this year, since it's Matthew's return, he has been playing only safety. He does come down and play near the line of scrimmage a bit, but sometimes he's back there. It's been Jerod Powers, and Jerod Powers had actually a really good season thus far when they moved, because he was one of the starters a season ago, and he's moved, slid inside. And because of his play, Matthew hasn't played a single bit of slot corner except for there were a few plays when either Cromartie or Peterson went out, and so Power slid outside, then Matthew slid to the slot, and Matthew's been playing deep, playing back and making plays. He's looking almost like the Honey Badger of a year ago. I did not remember this, but the Cardinals actually were I knew he was there without Matthew, but they were without both Rashad Johnson and Matthew when they played in Seattle a season ago.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that's true. And now you guys have Dione Buchanan, right? And he's been playing pretty well.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. He's fun to watch. We call him Drone. We call him Drone.
Drone.
Yeah, he's like the way he hits. It's fierce. It is fierce. And he's gotten better. That he really doesn't even play safety. He plays inside. He plays.
He's a box guy.
He plays inside linebacker on nickel possessions.
And it's interesting.
And they just have him run around and hit people. It's fun.
Well, people around here love him because he played at Wazoo, Washington State. So people have been following
likeable.
His career. Yeah,
and
the Cardinals keep picking these guys that I really like. It's kind of annoying. I wish that you guys would stop doing that.
Yeah, that's you guys got Russell Wilson. Like, the whole world likes Russell Wilson, which which makes us sad because he's in Seattle and we can't really like the Seahawks.
Yeah,
that's kind of how that goes. So what do you have, any sort of prediction of what's going to happen? Do you have any big And for those of you who are listening live, it looks like we're going to go off the air. I thought 45 minutes would be enough. It turns out Danny Kelly has so much good stuff to say. So, but
long-winded.
But after the show, no, it won't be too long when the show wraps up. A few minutes after, the rest of the show will be available on demand, on recorded. We don't getting cut off. But yes, yeah, so stick around in a few minutes when we finish up. You'll be able to listen to the rest of the. But do you have any big predictions of what's going to happen in this game?
Well, it's gonna be hard. I feel like I probably make this prediction literally every single game for the Seahawks, but it's always true. It's always like the last possession decides the game. And if you look at the Seahawks like track record, I want to say they've gone. Well, let's see here. It's been like three seasons since they've lost by more than 7 points. Or more, actually, I take that back, since they lost by more than 10 points. Because this year they lost by 9 points to the Chargers in week two. But going back before that, they hadn't lost by more than 7 in a couple seasons. And so they always manage to keep it close. Win or lose, it's always sort of a game at the end. And I don't really see that changing this week. I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think it'll probably, you know, be one of those games that's like 21-19 or 22-20, something like that, where, you know, it's a cliffhanger till the very end. And I'm personally predicting a Seahawks win just because their backs are against the wall. They're playing for pride too, because you guys beat us in their place last year. I think that'll probably be sticking in their memories pretty hard. And I think, you know, just in general, they have their backs to the wall. They have to win this week if they want this season to be a title defense even opportunity. So that would be my prediction, but obviously giving tons of credit to the Cardinals, just because I know now they're a really strong team. I think I had a little bit of doubt early in the year just because of so many injuries. But you guys have kind of turned me into a believer, just beating good teams consistently and doing it sort of the way that the Seahawks do it, in terms of just flying around, making plays on defense and getting turnovers and just sort of playing like underdogs. I think, you know, you guys are definitely not the underdogs in general this year, being the best team with the best record, I should say, this season. But I think that you guys kind of have taken on that identity of like, no one believes in us, so like, screw all of you.
Well, it's been quite a love fest here. No love. I mean, off the field, most of the time there isn't much respect. Well, there's definitely respect, but there's not a lot of feeling good between Cardinals and Seahawks. But this show has been a show full of love and respect between Danny Kelly and I, between field goals and Revenge of the Birds. Arizona Cardinals fans, follow Danny. He's a great follow on Twitter. Danny's actually really easy to find because his Twitter handle is the site account at Field Goals. Super easy. And head on over. If you aren't already a member at Field Goals, head on over, sign up so you can participate in some of the discussions. And of course, let's continue with this love fest between the Cardinals and the Seahawks. And then when it is another Cardinals victory in Seattle, it can at least be respectable. And let's not be, you know, they still have the ring, as Bruce Arians said just a couple of days ago. Hey, they're the defending champions. We ain't done. Boop. Yeah. So yeah, that's the case. Danny, I really appreciate anything else you'd like ours, our Revenge of the Birds fans to know, to hear about what's coming up over the next couple of days.
You know, not really. I think if you check out Field Goals today, we've got a lot of good stuff up. We've already published, I think, 5 kind of in-depth things, and so I'm pretty proud of what we got up there today. So definitely appreciate you guys checking out the site.
All right. Danny Kelly, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, as always. I really appreciate the time you took on the show. Thanks so much. Arizona Cardinals fans, we'll wrap this up. This has been another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. We got Seattle coming up on Sunday. After that, Seth Cox and I will be back on the air Tuesday night, I think 9 p.m. Arizona time. We'll be back on the air to review that show. But for now, thanks, everyone. Check out, make sure you head over to Field Goals for the Seattle stuff, and head over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Continue in the conversation. Join the best Cardinals community on the web. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio signing out.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.